You are listening to WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM, online at WFMU.org. I'm quite pleasantly surprised that Chin is here with a special guest, and everybody's smelling pretty good, so that's always nice. I want to thank our volunteers helping us today: Rachel, David, Ben, Hafez, and Jackson. I don't mean to be so self-absorbed, just stewing in my feelings all the time, not thanking the volunteers. I love you. And thanks for everything. Let's just slink into what magic awaits, and stay strong, stay steadfast, stay rich, and in touch with yourself. Till next time.
Soul stew. We sell so much of this, people wonder what we put in it. We're gonna tell you right now. Give me about a half a teacup of bass. Now I need a pound of fat back drums. Now give me 4 tablespoons of ballin' Memphis guitars. This gonna taste all right. Now just a little pinch of organ. Now give me a half a pint of horn. Boil. That's it right there. Now beat well.
Wow, man, I could listen to that all day. And I have on occasion. This is It Soup Yet? My name is Alan Harding. I'm a chef and a restaurateur. I am not a hobbyist when it comes to the stove. And I welcome other hobbyists and professionals as well, as the home cook is invited as well. Today, we're going to talk about our families, a little bit about our families, moms, dads, significant others. We want to know what the best dish your significant other has made that put a smile on your face. We're going to open up the phones in a couple minutes, and hopefully people will call. It's one of the biggest, one of my strangest fears to have a phone in show and no one call up, but I've been assured that that's not going to happen today. I'm here with my new best friend Scott, who's going to make sure I don't embarrass myself. He's my engineer / wingman, and today the subject, if your mom's or dad's best dish doesn't work out, we're going to move on to some other things I feel really strongly about. One of which is a forgotten dish, largely in society, and that's chili. I love chili. I love to make chili. I love to read about chili. I love to hear about different kinds of chili, especially if it's off the beaten track. We're also going to talk about another much maligned tubular form of meat, in the words of Anthony Bourdain, and that would be the hot dog. A lot of people don't eat hot dogs anymore. I don't know why. I love a good hot dog, and I'm pretty good at showing some moderation in the inhalation of hot dogs. And the other arcane piece of information that I would love to hear about, if anyone has any information about, is the papaya drink that made the Papaya King famous. It's a very specific beverage that they have in these big giant tanks, and they turn really slowly. And if you want to call in and talk about any of this, hopefully, the phone number is 201-201-9368. And it looks like we have a caller. It's my lucky day. Thank you. Hey, how you doing? What do you got for me?
Hi, I'm listening to Is It Soup Yet? And I wanted to know if you had space for me to join the show. I wanted to tell a story about making artichoke hearts.
Artichoke hearts. How do you go about doing that?
Well, I wanted to know Alan Harding's special tricks for it, but that was something that my family used to make for me that is really near and dear to my heart, where they would make artichoke hearts and have them laid out on a platter and then give us little bowls of butter. And we just stripped the artichoke hearts piece by piece and all the leaves and dip them into butter. So I thought that was a nice little tradition, and I'd love to know what Alan knows about it.
I know enough about artichokes to steer very clear of them. There's a couple of things that I am intimidated about, and one of them is artichokes. I love the Italian artichoke, where they like kind of trim the tops and braise them in like white wine or a little water and vinegar and just slowly steam them with lemon and garlic, and then you can pull the leaves off and then dip those. You're talking about dipping the leaves in the butter, right?
Yes,
and scraping them off with your front teeth, right?
Yes, yeah, so that, delicious. I've never done it myself. I'd love to.
I never want to do that myself. I can't imagine anything I would not rather not eat. But I don't judge.
To my heart, never pun for the artichoke heart. Is there something for artichoke hearts that you like to do?
Now you're talking. Artichoke hearts is like the joy of the artichoke without any of that thistly detritus. You know, the leaves and all that other stuff. I'll go right to the artichoke heart. And my mom used to do crab meat stuffed artichokes in like a thin layer with breadcrumbs on them, and they were boiled, and they were broiled, so they got all crispy, and we really enjoyed those. So they're like a special occasion thing. But those artichoke hearts came out of a can.
Did they? Well, that's even simpler because I'm not much of a chef.
I don't judge that. We got another caller. Thank you so much for calling. Hello, how you doing? What do you got for me?
Hi. As far as cooking goes, I'm my own significant other.
Fair game.
So I have a recipe to share that's really simple, and but it's something that I usually make as a side dish, and I really enjoy, which is steamed baby carrots in a yogurt sauce.
Steamed baby carrots.
Yeah, so I steam the baby carrots in a bowl in the microwave.
Okay.
I season it with a lot of garlic powder, salt, pepper, yogurt, squeeze a whole lemon, and dill. And it basically makes a tzatziki sauce with dill.
That sounds delicious.
And it takes about 5 minutes to make, and... It's just a really great side dish.
Wow. And when you talk about baby carrots, are you talking about that bag of like baby carrots that looks like they were made in like a rock tumbler?
Right. Actually, I forgot about that. They're manufactured that way.
Yeah, that's what I figured. I'm not a great fan of those. I like the farmer's market carrots, but baby carrots, they do have their place. That sounds like a great dish. I'd love to give it a shot. Thanks for calling.
Sure.
What do you got for me?
Hi,
how you doing? What do you got for me?
Alan.
What's good?
Thanks so much. I'd have to say my father's chili was amazing.
Now you're talking.
I don't have the whole recipe memorized. I know he would always do sirloin as the main meat. And I know that's blasphemy for some with chili.
Not at all. I would use sirloin in chili. So am I inferring correctly that your father would grind his own meat for the chili?
Actually, he would practically ground it. But he would just cut it.
Oh.
Loved the cleaver, and he would just stand there, make it real thin, and then kind of chop it up.
That,
essentially ground, but he handed it.
No, that is the more labor-intensive route to go as opposed to using ground meat. But I do believe that the best chili is probably hand-cut and diced, and sirloin sounds delicious.
Yeah, no, his was, he'd cook it all day. If you like to be involved. Yeah, he would do it when the chili was coming. We bought him actually a stock pot, giant one, for him to do big batches of chili, or he made different soups.
And what kind of flavor profile are we talking here, spice-wise? Do you remember?
Probably pretty standard. He would make, usually there'd be some that would not be as hot, but he loved the heat. And so he did a lot of different peppers. He was either grow some.
Wow, he grew his own peppers.
Would. Oh, yeah.
How about beans?
I'm not sure which ones he used, or even if, I don't know if he cooked those. He might have just canned those.
He put in canned beans.
Yeah, we cook our own beans now. So much better flavor profile when you do it yourself.
Yeah, either or. It depends on how much time you have or what you're trying to achieve.
Right.
Well, that sounds delicious.
Yeah. No, it's amazing.
Well,
what about you? What's on the chili side?
Well, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, if you talk to Texans and the Texas chili doesn't have meat in it. And doesn't have beans in it. They go bean free. It's all meat. And they talk about chili powder, but I've never been quite successful finding a jarred or packaged chili powder that works. I always end up blending my own chilies and spices from scratch. I use one of those little Braun coffee grinders. I have one just for spices, and I like to toast the cumin and toast the coriander and toast the other things and then put it in that grinder and grind it into dust and use that to spice the chili. That really makes a big difference if you're cooking chili at home. You should give it a try.
No, I love it. No, I'm big into doing your own spices. You remind me a lot of doing different curries.
Oh,
great. It's just whatever blends people do. But yeah, you roast them a bit. Grind them yourself.
I love hearing about different spice blends. Thanks for calling. I appreciate the information.
Yeah, cheers.
Hey, how you doing? What do you got for me?
Tamales.
Tamales. You know,
yep.
Tamales are, they are widely adored and very rarely replicated with any success. I've never made one from scratch. But I have eaten loads of them. They're quite delicious. They're quite sturdy. I like the fact that they're, you know, you can steam them and cool them and then steam them the next day and just keep eating. Are you saying you actually make tamales?
Yes, I do.
Wow.
And it was inherited from my father. Actually, it was kind of, I was forced into doing it. Well, he learned from his mother and wisely realized that she wasn't going to be around forever. So he took it on. And when his mother passed away, well, him and my mom couldn't be in the kitchen together. So I had a really big dining room, and it was something that him and I did for like 25 years. You know, he was the lead man, and I was the helper. Once my father passed away, the mantle was passed to me.
Oh, that's great.
And then I was the boss, and I am the boss to this day.
I don't doubt that for a second. It sounds, I love a good tamale. I always wondered, and briefly before we move on, the paste that's inside the tamale, inside basically it's a corn leaf, right?
Well, yeah, the masa.
Yeah.
It's called masa.
Now, tell everyone listening what that is in layman's terms.
Well, in Los Angeles, where I live, it's very easy. There's many places to access it. You can go to East LA and where the mill is, and they'll grind it for you.
Wow.
But I go to, which is closest to my house, which was always, you know, it was this place called Tennessee at 2000. And I tell them exactly how I want it made. I want it made con mucho grano, which means a lot of texture. There's a lot of bits in it.
Interesting.
And yeah, that's the way you get it. You get it fresh. A lot of places do it really well, but I like to go to the mill, you know, where they grind it.
Wow. That's great. I would love to try them someday. If you want to send a recipe to the comment board, that would be wonderful. We have another caller. Thanks for calling. Hey, you're on the air. Hey, what do you got for me?
Oh, dude. So my wife makes this awesome potato and cauliflower curry served over basmati rice. Fabulous.
Potato and cauliflower curry.
Yeah.
So is that like
cauliflower,
what is that Indian dish that I always order from the takeout? Alu matar gobi?
Yes, I believe so.
And am I correct in assuming that it has little, does it have little flecks of cardamom pod in it?
Yes.
That I'd love to know how to make that dish. Has she ever let you watch?
I watch, I've observed, but no, that's her dish. So I don't know the intricacies of her making that. Right. I just let her have that one because it's a little more complicated than I'm used to.
I love basmati rice. You know, right now I live in Coney Island in Brooklyn, and there's a Indian supermarket down the street from me. And when I go in there and I look at the basmati rice, I swear to God, my head pops off because there's like 50 different kinds of basmati rice, and I don't even know where to start. And each one's in like a 10-pound bag, so you got to buy a 10-pound bag, and you know how long that lasts. You know,
that's a commitment.
Yeah, it is commitment. I'd love to find a place that where you could go and like scoop into a bin and take like two or three cups of a different kind of rice and figure out how to cook it. But I love anything to do with rice. I love.
Awesome, man.
Yeah, and so this is a meat-free dish.
Yeah, it's meat-free. But also, like, if you like rice, my mom's arroz con pollo is intense. So that's another story.
Oh, well, arroz con pollo is a whole nother story. Does that rice have peas in it?
No, my mom doesn't put peas in hers. I will put peas in mine if I have it in the freezer, but...
And what kind of rice?
I just use long grain rice. I know like a lot of recipes call for arborio and stuff like that. I found like just regular white long grain rice works fine for me.
Yeah, but you don't use a parboiled rice, right? You use a whole grain?
Yes.
Yeah, that's when you're in the rice world, that's what separates the men from the boys, or the folks from the boys, is the use of a non-parboiled rice. Night and day difference between parboiled rice and a whole grain rice, right?
Right, yeah, I know.
Unbelievable. So. Hey, thanks a lot for calling. I really appreciate it. Hey, you're on the air. What do you got for me?
Oh, good evening, Alan. Thanks for the show. So I got a couple. First off, my birthday was last Saturday, and my mother came by with her pasta fagioli, which is probably one of my old-time favorites, and I'm probably going to open a can of worms on an Italian-American pronunciation.
Pasta fagioli.
That's what most people call it, yes.
Yes, not to be confused with the fazools that you pay the garbage man. So what got you going about this soup?
Oh, it's just, you know, one of those comfort foods, you know. It's something I've lived with all my life, was always a favorite. of course, she brought along what usually sparks her making it as she cooks a ham. So along with that, this was a get-together. We had a bunch of people over. She brought some of the sliced up ham as well. So she'll make the ham bone into the soup.
That's the best afterwards. Way. I love a ham bone in soup. That soup sounds delicious. If I was enjoying that soup, and I've made it before, nothing better than dunking into that soup is a chunk of lard bread. And if you've never had lard bread, you got to look into the lard bread Italian bakery. Chunks of salami and prosciutto with black pepper, delicious.
Sounds great. We always have to garnish that. You need a really fine grated cheese and some extra virgin olive oil right on top of it.
Sounds delicious. I love a good soup. Hey, thanks for calling.
Okay, well, I got some more on chili and hot dogs if you want as well.
Well, maybe we'll circle back. Hey, how you doing? You're on the air. What do you got for me?
How you doing? I want to talk about hot dogs.
Beautiful. I love a good hot dog.
Same. You know, so, I do have a great respect for hot dogs, you know, especially the Papaya King, you know, Grace Papaya, you know, is just a standby classic when you need a, you know, I think Grace still has the recession special on their windows, you know. You get like two hot dogs and a papaya drink for like, you know, $5 or whatever it was.
I don't know what they do, but hands down, 100% is the best hot dog in the tri-state area.
Oh, no, yeah. I mean, it's solid, classic.
It's the snap, right?
Yeah, it's a snap.
Yeah.
Now, I have a question, though. So, you know, I'm a lifelong New Yorker, right? And I had a Chicago dog not too long ago for the first time. And I got to say, they got some good dogs in Chicago. I wanted to hear your opinion on it.
I have not. I've only heard rumor. And, you know, I in the restaurant business, every once in a while you try a hot dog. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But I've never tried a Chicago hot dog. I did hear about this one place. I don't know if it's still open, but it was near Wrigley Field, and it was called the Wiener Circle, and it was like a hot dog stand, and it was open late at night, so there was a lot of drinking involved in the reverie of the people going there, and apparently it was one of those places where the customers and the counter people like interact in a rather spicy way. And there's like abuse and stuff like that going on, but the hot dogs there, I never really understood the. Correct me if I'm wrong, but they have this neon green relish.
It is a relish that's like, you know, greenish on it. Yeah.
It looks like it's electrified, right?
I mean, you know, it gotta wake you up if you're eating them that late, you know.
Yeah. And those little tiny peppers, I think they're called sport peppers.
Yeah, which I think is a hilarious name for a food item.
Yes, sport peppers is a hilarious name. And the other iconic thing about the Chicago dog that I believe is true is, do they put poppy seeds in their roll?
Well, the roll has them already. They're on the side.
Glued sesame seeds on a bagel, right?
Yeah, exactly. Same dealio, except it's a hot dog bun.
But is it basically a regular hot dog bun like we have here, but with sesame seeds?
As far as poppy seeds? As far as I could tell.
It's not a special dough or anything like that.
No, nothing special other than that. I mean, you know, this is the combination of the flavors. I mean, I like a lot of toppings on a hot dog.
Yeah.
You know, I do like my classic, like stewed onions, you know, don't get me wrong, but you know, if you get hot dogs with all these different, you know, avenues, like, you know, a bacon wrapped one or, you know, something else, you know, I can get behind it. I've been meaning to go to that place in New Jersey that the deep fries them.
That would be Rutt's Hut.
Rutt's Hut. There we go.
I've been there, and I was impressed, and I think they're called colloquially rippers, because they sometimes they burst and they give you like a lot of gashes and crags in the side to hold on to the chili and the sauce. But I love to make sweet stewed onions for hot dogs.
Are you a fan of cutting the hot dog in half to grill them, like grilling them flat, or you like them to, you know, kind of like, you know, get like blistery as such if you cook them on the grill or even the pan at home?
Yeah. I like to griddle the hot dog. I don't like to grill the hot dog. I like to griddle it and like roll it as it's cooking with a little bit of fat in a skillet, so it does develop a little bit of blistering. I'm not a fan of splitting. I like splitting. Yeah. I'll split a kielbasa, or I'll split a knockwurst just to get some char on that surface area. For a regular hot dog with a certain diameter, a griddling is the way to go.
Can I ask you one more question before you let me go?
By all means.
Hot dogs do you think you eat in a year? Because every 4th of July rolls around, you see the news say, like, you know, Americans eat this many hot dogs a year. And I think they got lowball numbers. And I feel like the country's got to pump those numbers up.
Yeah, the country, I have no idea how many hot dogs I eat a year.
That's the answer I want to hear. I ask people, and they say like maybe five. I'm like, what are you talking about?
No, it's more. If I have hot dogs for dinner, one thing I'll buy Hebrew National hot dogs at the supermarket, right? And there's eight of them in a package, right?
Yeah,
I'll eat all eight.
Oh, I'm not wrapping.
I'm not wrapping up two hot dogs in the leftover wrapper and throwing it in the refrigerator. What am I going to do with two hot dogs? A normal person can eat six hot dogs at one time, right?
I you know what? There's no judgment from this caller, all right?
Okay.
So you got a friend in me.
Thank you, buddy. Thank you.
Later.
Yeah, I mean, you know, nitrates, cured meats, you know, there's been a lot of disparaging of our dear friend, the hot dog, lately, and I'm not really down with it. I don't wake up in the morning and enjoy hot dogs. I tend to leave them for special occasions. And I'm a big fan of toppings. My favorite topping that I've been making lately is when you go to the hot dog aisle, right? They got the onions, those cart onions. I don't know how the hell they make those, but they're delicious. And then right next to them is the sauerkraut. Now, if you take the sauerkraut, open up the bag, put it in a pot, heat it up, it's nasty. It's not good. What you have to do with store-bought sauerkraut, and this is a fresh product. I'm not talking about canned sauerkraut. I'm not a big fan of canned sauerkraut. Bagged sauerkraut, fresh, in the same aisle as the pickles, put it in a strainer, rinse it, and then as it's rinsing, actually grab it with your hands and like wring it out and then rinse it again. Put that in a pot with a little bit of olive oil or a little bit of butter, a little bit of half and half, and heat that up really slowly. And if you really want to get crazy, if you have it, take two or three juniper berries and smash the juniper berries on a cutting board and make them into a paste and throw those into the sauerkraut. Unbelievable flavor you get from three juniper berries. Big, big proponent of juniper berries. They go great in sauerkraut. And also, don't make the mistake of putting your hot dog on the bun and then putting the sauerkraut on top. Always put the sauerkraut underneath the hot dog. That way you won't end up with anything on your plate as you're eating your hot dog, right? So that's my take on the hot dog. Again, if you want to call in, if you so desire, to talk about your mom or dad or your own or any significant other's best dish, would be good to give us a call. The phone number is 201-209-9368. My name's Alan Harding. This is It Soup Yet? And I'm blessed to be debuting the show tonight in beautiful downtown Jersey City. I was grateful enough to have station manager Ken give me a shot. And we've opened up the phone lines to see and spread some breadcrumbs on the water to see how many ducks we can catch with our interesting new food show idea on FMU. So the other ideas we had, we were talking about hot dogs. Talking about the other thing I want to hear about is, do you have a recipe for the papaya drink from the Papaya King? Can you make that at home? Have you ever tried to make it at home? Do you know what's in it? Do you know what goes on with that papaya drink? Because I would love to know, because it's a closely guarded industry secret. Looks like we got someone calling. Hey, how you doing? What do you got for me?
How's it going, sir? We're talking about food from important people in our lives.
Yeah, your mom, your dad, or your nonna.
Oh, not Italian. I'm Irish, but
it's okay.
I would love to have a nona though, but no, my grandpa and his scrambled eggs. That's something I can never forget. Growing up, you know, I could never figure it out. But as I grew older, making my own scrambled eggs, he just put a whole tablespoon of butter in there and scrambled them up. And that's what made them so good. But, yeah, for the longest time, like, it really eluded me. I'm like, how did he get that? But, yeah, just the way they're, like, because there's so much butter in it, each of the eggs almost kind of, like, got fried in the butter when it gave it this, like, not crunchy, but, you know, had like a...
It was a hard curd.
Yeah, exactly.
They were hard scrambled eggs.
It was, yeah, super... That's like... I mean, I love my grandpa and everything, so there's the memory from that, but it's just like the food memory, too. If I had those eggs without the grandpa element, I'd still think about those eggs on a daily basis.
Well, that's a great memory. I mean, we could go on for hours and hours about scrambled eggs. It's not that easy to make a good scrambled egg. It really isn't. But that sounds delicious. Anyone else? No. Okay. Well, you know, for me, the scrambled egg, I heard an interesting, I don't know if it's a, I don't know if it's a myth or whatever, but when there was a chef in New York City, in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. His name was Andre Sultner. And he had a restaurant called Lutèce. It was famous for a long time. And whenever if you went to go see him to apply for a job, he would ask you to make him an omelet. And he'd give you the pan and some butter and three eggs. And basically he would hire you and retain you on your ability to make an omelet, which... It's not an easy thing. There's a lot of intricacies involved in making a good omelet. And if you want to talk about omelets, I'm here too. Again, the number's 201-209-9368. This is It Soup Yet? My name's Alan. I'll be on till 7. And we're going to see who is interested in talking about their mom's or dad or grandparents' food. I don't go too deeply into my history, but my grandparents were French, Alsatian, and my grandfather was a pastry chef, and he used to bake cakes. Actually, he was a bread baker. He baked bread on ocean liners going back and forth between the United States and America in the 20s and 30s. And I learned a lot about eating good food from him. Oh, we got someone. Hey, what do you got?
Alan.
Yes.
How are you?
Great. Who's this?
This is Gene.
Gene, the dancing machine. What do you got for me, Gene? I know you're a good cook. I've eaten your food.
Well, you know, I'm making some chili right now, Alan, but it doesn't have any meat. It's vegetarian chili.
I don't disparage the vegetarian chili. It's
very simple. Very, very simple.
Now, that sounds. I don't know how it could be simple without meat, because to me, meat chili is simple because it's meat flavored with other stuff. But with a vegetable chili, what's the body of what you're eating?
Well, I've got, you know, and I made a mistake. I thought I was putting white beans in, the cannellinis. Is that how you say it?
Cannellini, yes. Like a white kidney bean.
But I put one can of that, and then I put in some chickpeas. And I thought I made a mistake, but I didn't. And then I added some good tomatoes and, you know, those plum tomatoes in the can. And, it, you know, you have to put in a lot of spice, a lot of, you know, taco kind of spice.
Did you actually go to your leftover Ortega taco box and take out that seasoning package and use that?
No.
You blended your own taco seasoning.
I didn't do that either. I in my spice rack there's like Mexican seasoning and I use that.
All the work was done for you.
All the work was done and that, but you have to put a lot in because it requires a lot of flavor, you know, to bring up the flavor. So.
Well,
yeah.
That sounds delicious, Gene. Thanks for calling. Hey, how you doing? You're on the phone with Alan talking about food. What do you got?
Hi, Alan. It's Baby Carrots again.
Hey, buddy. What's up?
I like talking about food because I really just rediscovered cooking after buying Trader Joe's entrees for starting with COVID.
Yeah.
But that went on for a few years.
I hear you, buddy. I feel your pain.
We were just talking about a vegetarian chili. I made a vegetarian curry.
That sounds good.
The other night with a tofu that I marinated, zucchini, red onion, potato, and carrots. I make the curry with a chicken stock, tomato paste, and I let it cool down a little bit, and then I put in some yogurt to thicken
you're
it.
Yogurt guy. You're going to be known around the station as the yogurt guy.
I do like
when you call again. Scott's going to say the yogurt guy's on the phone.
Yeah,
I love yogurt. You know what I really love? I don't know if you're aware of this, but when I use yogurt for cooking, I mm-hmm. open the yogurt and I take the yogurt that I'm going to use in my dish and I put it in a coffee filter in a strainer and I leach out like an inordinate amount of liquid and it all drains away and it leaves you with like a thicker, more Lebna, sour, creamy kind of yogurt, which is delicious.
Right. Well, I do use, I've been using Faye.
Say that again?
Is the pronunciation Faye?
Not
the
sure.
The brand of yogurt?
Oh, yeah, the brand name. I've seen that brand name. Yes. That's my go-to yogurt.
And it's quite thick.
Well, thanks for calling. I'm going to give it a shot. Hey, how you doing? What do you got for me?
So I have two things. One's the family recipe, and one's the hot dog thing.
Well, let's start with the family. Family first.
My mom's peanut butter cookies.
Ooh.
I think I would die if I couldn't have her peanut butter cookies anymore.
And do you have to rely on your mom making them and giving them to you, or have you assumed the mantle of producing them?
I've written down her recipe, but like, there's just something about the way she makes them. You know what I mean? It's probably psychosomatic, but you know.
Yeah. Well, What are we talking about here? Are they drop cookies, or do you make them flat, and do you like press the back of the fork in like they did in grade school?
Yes. So like she makes the batter in like a big bowl, and then, you know, batter, air quotes, and then, you know, puts them out on the cookie sheet, and she presses them down with the fork and cooks them.
Wow, that sounds delicious.
Just an old-fashioned peanut butter cookie. And it's just, there's something about it, the way she makes it.
I'm going to give it a shot. Thanks for calling. Hey, you're on the air. What do you got for me?
Hey, I'm a longtime listener of WFMU, but this is my first time calling. I heard you were doing a show. I've been a fan of you, Alan, and your cooking
wow.
for years, and I'm so glad to hear you're on the radio.
Dad always said I had a face for radio.
Yeah, and based on your images, I'm going to disagree with them. I love that you're connecting with family. Unfortunately, my mom went to college back in last century, so she couldn't cook. I mean, my favorite meal with my mom was Frank's cut up as coins and beans.
Oh, that's a good dish.
You know, she could have thrown a couple onions in there.
Why not?
But you know what? She took me to Gate Hill Day Camp and Chief Takazis made a rice with hamburger beef and onions, and that was my favorite thing.
Would you say that would fall under the aegis of casserole?
Well, it was it wasn't soupy.
No.
I think tying in food and family, and for those of us that didn't have that, it's so important, and it's something that we missed.
I couldn't agree more. I have a lot of fond food memories regarding my family. My grandparents, I was mentioning before, were from France and lived in upstate New York and would have these picnics, and you know, there were just things from the garden and chickens and you know, roasted chickens, and it was just great memories, and I love talking about it and I love hearing about it. Hey, thank you so much for calling. I got another call.
I hope you're going to continue, because it's great to hear you doing this show.
Well, we'll see what happens, man. Thanks for calling. Hey, you're on the air with Alan, me.
Yeah. Hey, Alan. Hey, great to hear you. I'm, you know, a long-time listener. I think I call the show every decade, but hearing your show the first time prompted me to call in. I was thinking about different things. I got totally into cooking, but I want to start with family and thinking of my grandmother. And I think it's something you'll appreciate. Like, simple things she used to make for breakfast. She called them Baptist cakes. She would just fry pizza dough. And then, you know, she would hand them out hot, and we would just dip them in like a plate of sugar and eat them. They were so good. And whenever we would visit her, we'd be like, Baptist cakes, Baptist cakes.
Baptist cakes were fried pizza dough.
She would also make pizza with. She made her own dough.
So your grandmother is Italian?
Italian, yeah.
And so she would make her own pizza dough, flour and yeast, the raising of the thing, and make pizza in the evening. And then the day after, if there was pizza dough left over, you got Baptist cakes.
Exactly.
Yeah, I see how that works.
Amazing.
Yeah, your grandmother was thrifty. She wasn't going to throw away the pizza dough that wouldn't rise again to make a good pizza, nor feed you pizza 2 days in a row. She spun it off in a different direction into the Baptist cakes. Did the sugar that the Baptist cakes have, and my mom always had this, we always had this on our, if we had toast, it was like 3/4 cup of sugar and like 2 tablespoons of cinnamon mixed together, and that was in like an old salt shaker, and that's what we would use for our toast. Was there cinnamon on the Baptist cakes?
No, that's great. No, we were, you know, I think we were a lot more of sort of a, I don't know, a street fighting family. We weren't that advanced. But so it'd just be like, you know, just grab the, you know, the sugar bowl, which had the spoon.
Sure.
And just whap a bit on the little plate and dip them in. You know, they'd come fresh. The oil would make the sugar stick, and we'd just, you know, dip and eat and dip and eat.
So were they fried in oil?
Yeah, they were fried in oil.
Like a Zeppoli?
Like a Zeppoli, but they were strips. But they would bubble like they were full of air.
Wow.
And I've tried to do this, and they just come up like they feel like chunks of eating like, you know, like pencil erasers. They're just not the same.
You mean they didn't have that, they weren't spongy, they weren't, the dough was unleavened, right?
I got store-bought, like, pizza dough from, like, Whole Foods or something like that.
Yeah.
It just didn't do what Nana's did.
Wow. Well, I've been cooking a long time. I've made a lot of dishes, and I've eaten a lot of food. I could maybe count on one hand the amount of times I've made pizza from scratch. But the times that I have done it, it has been a revelation.
It is. And I have her pizza recipe and also sausage bread. Everything was this dough. It was, but it's all in the dough. And it's nothing like Nana's, because how she made the dough was, you know, that was only her hands and mind.
Wow, unbelievable. That sounds delicious. Yep. I love sausage. I love sausage bread. I love bread and meat together. Oh, we got another caller. Thank you so much. That is such a great memory. Hey, you're on the air. What do you got? Hello?
Oh, I might have misdialed. I dialed the wrong number. I apologize.
Oh, that's okay. No problem.
This is the radio, is it?
You are on the radio, yes.
Oh, okay. Then I didn't misdial.
No, if you're calling to talk about food in any way, shape, or form, it seems.
Yeah, man.
You're in the right place.
I got a quick one, and I'll talk fast, and then I got a clean joke. So the quick one is, growing up in the 70s, we were a family of seven, five kids and two parents. So my mom had to stretch the budget. So one of our go-to meals every week, we would have spaghetti and tuna fish.
No way.
In the tuna fish.
Get out of here.
What's that?
Get out of here, spaghetti. Yep. You mean like mayonnaise-y celery tuna fish?
No celery, no onion. Mayonnaise-y tuna fish on iceberg lettuce on one side of the plate, spaghetti with red sauce on the other side of the plate.
Okay, don't move. The authorities are coming to get you. You should not be promoting that recipe in any way, shape,
it
or form.
No, that doesn't
work. That's just all sorts of wrong, buddy. That is wrong with a capital W.
And the second thing is, yes, we also had the cinnamon sugar shaker.
Like, now you're going a good direction. Toast. Yeah. And
here's a clean joke. Very clean joke. So people get confused about what's the difference between a chickpea and a garbanzo bean. Do you know what the difference is between a chickpea and a garbanzo bean?
No idea.
I've never paid an extra $50 to have a garbanzo bean on my chest.
There you go. That's a little spicy. I hope I don't get in trouble. Hey, you're on the air. Hopefully you have some family-friendly cooking things to talk about. No filth.
Yeah. Hello.
Hey, how you doing? What do you got for me?
Oh, hi, honey. I was listening to the conversation before with the previous, not this the last caller, the one, the previous one, the other before the other one.
The good caller, the mayonnaise
tuna
fish guy.
He was talking about the pizza dough and stuff.
Yeah.
I can make focaccia bread, and because I'm originally Italian, and my mom, I learned from her to make focaccia bread, and he was talking about the dough, like you fry it. If, you know, he have leftovers and you cut it in little pieces and you fry it, it just gets like becomes like a bubble, and it's empty inside. Like, I don't know how to say. And it's like not gummy or chewy, or it's really nice and crunchy and light.
Yes, I agree. I understand 100% what you're talking about. To me, from what I from my CSI experience, it sounds like he was frying pizza dough that had yet risen, that it was just like muddy, flat dough right yeah. after it's mixed, before yeah. it had a chance to levitate.
Yeah, but not only that, we make, it's a tradition in where I come from, we make these kind of little, kind of, we call them frittelle, which are like these dough, very thin, and then you fill up with mozzarella and tomato, and then you close it in kind of a half circle, and you fry it. And you can fill it up with tuna fish and tomato. You can put in ricotta cheese with pancetta or whatever you want. And they're delicious because while they fry, they kind of, you know, they bubble up. And when they're done, they're so delicious to eat. So that, I'm very happy that I learned to do that.
Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
That sounds so friggin' delicious that I want to eat it right now. And also, that's one thing I've heard. What you just explained,
yeah,
I have never heard of that before. And I know a couple two tree things about a couple two tree things. I never mm-hmm. heard of anything like that. What region of Italy does that come from?
I come from Puglia,
south
of Italy, in town called Morfetta near Bari.
Wow.
And it's a tradition to make those on a certain day. To be making them on Christmas Eve or New Year's Eve or, you know, during holidays. And
so
we make them anyway, anytime we wanted.
Let me just ask a couple questions so yeah. I can get it better pictured in my mind.
Yeah.
Is this dough... This isn't pizza dough. This is, you're talking about pasta dough?
No, it's
you're talking
pizza
about pizza dough with
pizza
yeast in
dough.
It. Yeast in but it. I, that's right.
No, with eggs. No eggs. It's just flour and a little bit of, the necessary ingredients.
Like yeast.
A little bit of water, warm water, and salt, and a little bit of olive oil. And then I mix it up, and then I let it rise.
Wow,
I make the focaccia bread, and I make, focaccia bread thinner with the rosemary and coarse salt on it.
Okay.
I still have a lot of uses out of it.
I still have questions. I'm sorry, lady.
Please do.
The focaccia yes. dough, right? Focaccia yeah. is basically pizza dough, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Wait. Aspet. Pizza dough is flour and water and some other things, but it also contains yeast, right?
Yes, of course.
Yeast. What do you call yeast in Italian?
Lievito.
The lievito. Right.
Yeah.
Now, the pasta that you're, the little dumplings that you're talking about making.
Yeah.
Was that made with the same dough that you make focaccia out of?
Yes, my friend.
Oh, now you're talking.
Like a focaccia, it's like thicker than pizza.
Yes.
So, and it has, the little cherry tomatoes all around with a spread of oregano on top and a lot of olive oil. And that's how it cooks.
And the tomatoes are put on the focaccia raw?
Yeah.
Or you blister them first in a pan.
You put the dough in a pan and I just do it in my hands.
Yeah.
So that is straight and it gets in a circle in this particular
I would love to cook with you, lady.
Me too.
Where do
I
you
like
live?
To cook
I'm
going to
I want to come over. That sounds so delicious.
I'm happy you said that. You made my day.
Now, and you talk about The other guy, he was talking about tuna fish with his spaghetti, but with mayonnaise in it. And you're talking about tuna fish. You're talking about the real Italian tuna,
yes.
tonno, in a can, the one that's like $6 a can that I love, and that with tomatoes.
But you know what? You have to get the right brand of tuna fish. not the American ones, that they're Italian ones. I don't want to give you brand names.
Where do you live?
I used to live in New Jersey in Summit, and last year in August, I moved to Medford, Massachusetts.
Oh, okay. So you're not in Brooklyn, and you're not anywhere near Brooklyn?
No,
no. Shame.
But, you know, I used to come at see shows at WFMU down there at the Mother Building.
Wow, that's so great. You are hands down the best call so far tonight.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Please call again. I love you.
Okay, I will call again.
Te
for
amo.
Sure.
Grazie. Okay. We have another caller. Hey, how you doing? Hello?
Yes, hi.
Can you turn down your device a little?
This is your cousin, Michelle.
Hey.
Can you hear me?
Now, for those of you listening, this is my cousin, Michelle. She is a real Italian.
Italian, but I am half French, as Alan shared.
Yes.
We are a French family.
and I'm embarrassed to say that I may not remember what your mom's maiden name was, her last
Mergia.
Name. Mergia.
Yes.
And where in Italy was that family from?
So my grandfather was from, his side of the family was from Sicily, Naples, and a little town called Nobledon.
Oh, wow.
But Alan, I have a question for you.
Okay.
And it pertains to family, as I hear you're
we're talking about
family on the show.
Sure.
Grandma's netzla was my absolute favorite, and I don't have that recipe.
That's a very interesting question that you have. Now, and I have attempted to deconstruct it. If you turn back the tape to earlier in the show, I was talking about my grandparents, who is Michelle's grandparents as well. Our grandmother, Matilda, is no longer with us, but she was French, particularly from the region of Alsace originally. And her dish that she would make with roast pork loin or pork chops was something she called gnefla, which turns out, after I went to culinary school, turns out to be spätzle. Spätzle is basically gnefla. What grandma did to her gnefla that made it spectacular is she would hand form the dumplings from the dough and poach them in the water, as opposed to if you go down the rabbit hole of making spätzle. There's a couple ways of making spätzle. You can make a spätzle batter, smear it onto a cutting board very thinly with a palette knife, and then take that palette knife over a pot of simmering salted water and tilt the cutting board, and then take the palette knife and actually cut noodles off of that smeared mass of spätzle into the water. Do you follow that?
That is so awesome. But I have to tell you, when I was a little girl, I couldn't figure out why Grandma was scraping the pancake batter into the boiling water until I had the delicious, delicious meal when she was done.
You know what else was the trick to her gnefla?
What was that?
Brown butter.
Yes!
The butter was browned, and she would brown the butter in the big skillet or something. And then, right as the butter was browning, to stop the butter from browning, a big handful of breadcrumbs, coarse chopped breadcrumbs, would go into that butter, and then the dumplings on top of that.
Delicious.
Rings a bell?
It does. And you know what? There was one other thing, and I don't know if it was something that your Uncle Pete, my dad, added, but it was the toast croutons.
Yes, the toasted croutons. No, I think Grandma did the toast croutons too. And my mom did the exact same thing and made it just like Grandma. And it was always served with pork chops or pork roast with Homemade applesauce.
Applesauce. Ah. Oh.
Right.
Oh my gosh. Such an awesome, awesome memory.
Unbelievable. I remember, it's so good to hear you. And I've been going down. Do you remember, I don't know what relative this guy is, but Lou and Lou Roper?
Yes, Mutzi and Lou. Okay. I do remember Lou.
Lou Roper would have these parties and he would do this chicken. He graduated from Cornell University in the agricultural department. He was a chicken farmer, and he had this chicken recipe that he got. He gave me the pamphlet for from the Cornell extension, and it was basically a chicken marinade, and it was oil, vinegar, an egg, and poultry seasoning.
And you know what, Alan? I think my dad stole that one, too.
He did. He knocked it. He nailed it, and I miss Pierre. I miss Pete greatly. Great to hear from you, Michelle. I got to wrap this up.
All right, Alan. Have a great show.
Okay. So I have to say the legal ID. This is WFMU from East Orange, and it's WMFU in Mount Hope, in Rockland County and New York City at 91.9 FM, and online, streaming online at WFMU.org. Thank you so much for putting up with me. This was a lot of fun. I hope we can do it again. Peace out. Take care. Brush your hair.
Now give me 4 tablespoons of ballin' Memphis guitar. This gonna taste all right. Now just a little pinch of organ.
How many Allens can you handle in a day on WFMU? I guess we're about to find out. Let me rearrange here a little bit. Oh, mon ami! My name is Alan. This is Ask Alan. Advice on any topic from a completely unqualified purveyor of advice. 201-209-9368. 201-209-9368. I am filling in for the music of Mind Control. Thank you once again, Micah. If probably had all the food talk you want advice on, but hey, I'll dabble in the food. I'm no expert on advice giving, so why not give advice on food, for which I am also not an expert, although I love to cook. So what makes one an expert after all? Give a call, 201-209-9368, 201-209-9368. And I'm on Monday, I hope I'm saying that right, with Chin. Great show. I've heard him on the radio a couple times already. He's coming up, filling in for Dan Boda at 8 p.m. I am with you until 8 p.m. giving advice on anything. I don't care. Well done, Alan. Nice cooking show. I'm a guy who knows. Yeah, come on, give a call. 201-209-9368. Let's do some advice stuff. Maybe your relationship advice always seems to be the go-to. Anything. Time management issues. Last week, a woman called up with a broken fingernail. We handle anything. Medical advice? Sure, why not? You're looking to try something new, but you've not won to dive into new, somewhat risky things? Maybe we could talk through it. 201-209-9368. 201-209-9368. My name is Alan. Spelled the right way, just like the previous Alan. Give a call. 201-209-9368. I delved out into New York City this week. Met up with Joe Magasco. Got on a bunch of trains. I got comfortable in my little New Jersey world and haven't really traveled by the New York City subway much. But sometimes you got to break out of your comfort zones. And I did that this weekend. It was worth it. Went to see Swamp Dog at TVI. Hung out with Joe, my buddy Johnny Salami, and taking those little comfort risks. Usually worth it. Unless you get robbed or killed or something. 201-209-9368. Give a call. Advice on any topic. Gift giving seems to be a hot topic. On the radio, people trying to give a gift, and gift giving should be thoughtful and not junky. Nobody likes another piece of junk to throw on a shelf somewhere. So give a call, 201-209-9368, 201-209-9368. Talk to yet another Alan here at WFMU. I'll be here Thursday night for my regular radio program, 6 Degrees, at midnight after Dave the Spaz. I'll be here Sunday hosting a Pine Barrens festival with great band Jackson Pines. Oh, we got callers. They always come in bunches.
What the mice?
Hello, you're on the radio.
Hey, so I have 3 pet mice that I don't want anymore.
You have 3?
And
all right, what's your name? Hold on.
Them personally. My name's Ada.
Ada?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so you got 3 pet mice that you want to get rid of. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But
they're my bass player's pet mice, and I think she might be really offended if I don't want them anymore.
So where is she? Where does she? Do you live together?
No, she's in Hamilton.
And so she's living somewhere else?
Yeah.
And you took on this person's pet mice?
Yeah, she was having a hard time taking care of them. I think the issue was she had a problem neglecting them. I don't have as much of a problem neglecting them.
Ah, so she wanted to care for the mice in what would be considered a humane way, and you kind of just see them as what? So why did you take the mice?
Well, I had rats for quite a while, and I thought they might be similar.
Ah, but you don't feel the similarity between a mice and a rat? You were able to get close with your rats?
My rats love me. I love them back. I try everything with these mice, and they won't love me back.
How many rats did you have?
In my life, around 12.
You've had 12, but how many did you have at once?
3, most.
And you kept them in a tank?
Kept them in a cage. Mice go in a tank.
And then did you let them out to, like, roam around your apartment and stuff?
Oh, yeah. I'd go out with them in my shirt sleeves.
Say that again?
I would go out with them in my shirt sleeves.
Oh, you would just like go out to like where was like the weirdest place you ever went with your rats?
Well, I wouldn't go too far. There's this place at the end of my street called Family Fruit and Flower, where I'd go to buy overpriced milk or overpriced flour.
And you'd bring your rats. And so would people see your rats?
No, no.
So now you are not able to make a sort of emotional connection with your mice.
I am disabled by their presence. They're like goldfish.
Uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh. They don't do anything to...